Blog Talk Radio.
Bienvenido al Black Hole Radio. Este es El Tiempo y la Verdad con hermano Mohammed Abdullah Mohammed y hermana Teresa X Torres y hermano David Mohammed. Bendición, 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 bendición.
Brothers and sisters, the FOI Board of Directors and Black Hole Radio are proud to present The Final Call. The Final Call is the country's unique leading source for news. Founded by the Honorable Louis Farrakhan, National Representative of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the Nation of Islam, The Final Call follows in the tradition of Muhammad Speaks with hard-hitting national and international news and coverage of political issues. It is the official communications organ of the Nation of Islam. Founded in the 1930s as The Final Call to Islam, the newspaper evolved into Muhammad Speaks in the 1960s and boasted a circulation of 900,000 a week, with monthly circulation of 2.5 million. Today, the weekly Final Call newspaper serves a readership of diverse economic and educational backgrounds, including circulation in North America, Europe, Africa, and the Caribbean. You can find one of the beautifully bow-tied representatives in your area, or find Final Call on Facebook, Twitter, Google Plus, YouTube, or you can visit us on the web at www.thefinalcall.com.
I got angry, so I thought I could just leave this place. I thought I could just mentally exist somewhere else without the pressures of daily life. So I built a rocket ship, not only in my mind, but a physical rocket ship to take me away from this place. A place in space, some place that I could be and be not. I flew and I went up out of the atmosphere, past the known universe, until I came to a point in space where there was my black hole. Listen to Black Hole Radio, the irresistible force in the universe. Peace.
This is the time for truth, and we are trying to reach the Latino American community in order to share with our Latin American brothers and sisters some of the wonderful teachings that would be very important, not only important, but would be life-saving in these dangerous times. We are living in a time that has been prophesied as the time of judgment. And this country is under the judgment of Almighty God because of its treatment against the black man that was brought over as a slave and enriched this country, and also because of the annihilation of the Native Americans. And we are the descendants of those people. The Latinos are primarily people of color, descendants of indigenous people as well as African people, and we are at the bottom of the socioeconomic strata, And we are not aware of the changes that are going that are being made in this dispensation, because we have not been taught about the true meaning of prophecies. Our teachers are being our oppressors. If you are going to look for the truth, you should not look for the truth in the big churches, in the big cathedrals, because Jesus was born in a manger. That means that he was born in a state of poverty, in a state of simplicity, humility. So the whenever God chooses a people, he will bring those people from the despised and the rejected. Is anyone with me now?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Assalamu alaikum.
Oh, walaikum salam. Walaikum salam. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. We have now Brother David Muhammad, who is our co-host, and Brother Jason, who is a brother who has been, who has a story to tell us, and who is whom I know for quite a while now, and we're going to, you know, give you, you know, an interview. How are you, brother?
Oh, praise the Lord.
How are
fine,
you,
thank you, Allah. Thank you for having me. I'd like to greet everybody who's listening, the co-hosts, and Brother David and all the other guests, men and women, with the greetings and words of peace in the Arabic language. Assalamu alaikum. Peace be unto
everyone.
Wa alaikum salam, dear brother. How you doing?
And what does that mean, Brother Jason?
That means in Arabic, peace be unto you.
Oh, isn't that wonderful? Peace be unto you. Very nice.
Yes, sir.
Very nice. And what has been your life experience? How old are you now, my brother?
I'm 40 years old, sir.
40 years old, young. Isn't that wonderful?
Yes.
And what has been, like, you were born in the Bronx, right?
I was born in Harlem, yes, sir. I was born in Harlem, New York.
In Harlem, New York, and from... nationality parents from
well, my parents migrated to this country from Puerto Rico into Spanish Harlem, and then that's where I was finally conceived.
Oh.
I was conceived in Harlem, born in Harlem, and I was raised in the Bronx. I'm an only child. Both of my parents are deceased right now as we speak.
And how was your childhood?
Well, my childhood, I was an only child. You know, I basically went through, you know, basic formal life with my mother. My mother was sick. She was on a hemodialysis machine. She had two failed kidney transplants. So she was on a dialysis machine. So basically, we were raised on a strict diet as well. So that's why now, you know, I eat a strict diet the way I was raised. My mother did not eat salt. There were certain foods she couldn't eat because she was diabetic and due to the loss of her kidneys.
Isn't that something? And what type of religion they had?
Oh, my mother was Catholic.
Okay. And your dad? You know,
my father was the same. They were both Catholics. I wouldn't say practicing, but they were just Catholics. They just believed in God, period.
Okay, okay. And you went to school here?
Excuse me?
Did you go to school here?
I went to school. I went to Catholic school.
Oh.
For the early part of my life, I was in, you know, private school. I went to two Catholic schools, and then I went into the public school system.
Okay.
The public school system is basically, I would say, 2 years, because after that, when I went into public school, I maybe went to an elementary and maybe a year of high school, because after junior high school, maybe a year of high school, then I was arrested.
You were arrested? Wow. What happened?
Yes. I was arrested at the age of 16.
Caught up
in a crime for manslaughter for shooting someone, and it was sentenced to 8 1/3 to 25.
Isn't that something? Wow.
Yes.
So you were practically a child.
Yes. I went in, I was incarcerated as a child. Basically, that was the big part transition in my whole life, period.
Brother David, did you have any questions?
Absolutely. You know, obviously... the experience that you just mentioned, beloved, must have been transformative. And
oh,
you
yes.
lost a lot of, you know, while many people might look at that and say that you lost a lot of years of your life, did you find anything while you were in, like many of the brothers call it, the belly of the beast, that gave you a sense of direction and purpose?
Well, yeah, brother, it took a lot of, well, I was arrested at the age of 16. I wouldn't say I was conscious. I would say semi-conscious, because at that time you had Brothers for the Ansar Law community and the Nation of Gods and Earth in the street as we were coming up. So we came across brothers that were going through the system, coming in and out of the belly of the beast while in the wilderness, while we were in the street doing what we were doing as young teenagers and young adults. As you know, that's how I got caught up. And then when I was caught up, you know, the transition, yeah, the whole incarceration was a transition. I didn't know my purpose in life maybe till I was about 29, 30 years old. Even while in the process of going through my transition while incarcerated, because then everything becomes self-taught and self-motivated. Mm-hmm. You know, but like the messenger said, like the minister, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan says, we have to take prison and turn it as a gestation. And eventually you have to come out. When and where, we don't know when we're going to come out. Because sometimes you can't. Sometimes you get life, you never come out. And sometimes you may be coming out, but it just may not be fast as you wanted to. Because I went to 5 parole hearings. I was denied parole 5 times.
Mm-hmm.
I was sentenced to 8 1/3 to 25. I ended up doing the whole 3/3. Mm-hmm. So I ended up doing 17 years, 16 years, 8
now,
months.
Let me ask you a question, brother. Because across the country right now, with the skyrocketing rates of Black and Latino incarceration,
mm-hmm.
there's... you know, the way that they handle us inside of the penal system, about how they segregate us and separate us based upon race.
Sometimes
and,
how we handle ourselves, too.
Right. And
mm-hmm.
how the system uses that to maintain control and also to promote conflict. Can you speak to that in your experience?
Yeah, well, see, like New York State is basic. It's not as segregated as, let's say, Texas and California. See, in California, Latinos are with Latinos, white, Caucasians with Caucasians, and brothers with brothers, black with black, Asian with Asian. Like, everybody just sticks to their own. In other states, as like Texas, California, their systems, yes, they do segregate. That's how they control, because that's the majority of the money and finances to them states. See, people don't know that people that are incarcerated are even taking the jobs of people in America for way under wages. Right now, New York State alone, they make license plates. They make the sewer caps you see in the streets. They make lockers. They make beds. They make soap. They make pillows. They make mattresses, everything, even
mm-hmm.
opticals, brother.
They're even making the furniture that you could buy at a place like Target.
Yes. You can go right. Yes, Nikes,
mm-hmm.
everything.
Okay.
Right now,
I just wanted to find out whether Sister Victoria is with us.
Yes, sir. Yes.
Oh, okay. Excellent. And Sister,
I'm also on the line.
Oh,
yes, sir. I'm on the line.
Excellent. Okay. So we have our two queens, Sister Victoria and Sister Teresa. Okay. Do you have any questions, Sister Teresa?
Yes, sir. Brother Jason, how old did you say you were when you actually went into incarceration?
I was 16 years old. I had just turned 16. I was 16 years old for 2 months.
Okay. And you went into the juvenile and then into the adult
I was an adolescent. When I was incarcerated, which is, in other cities, they say it's a county jail. In New York, it's called Rikers Island. Basically, that's the county jail for New York City. I was incarcerated and went with adolescents, meaning we're from the ages of 16 to 18 years old. You know, we're considered adolescents. So I went into the adolescents, but I was charged as an adult. And then when you go upstate, they make your transition to start serving out your sentence. All the ages vary from 18 all the way to 100.
Mm. Sister Victoria, do you have any questions?
Yes, Brother Jason. What was the turning point, the conscious turning point for you that you actually said, this is it, I'm going to turn my life around, and I'm going to make it, and that you went full force ahead?
Well, when I was incarcerated, I already knew Islam, like I said, not very thoroughly, but just through friends, fathers who were in the Ansar Law community, who used to cater to the community back in the, you know, in the 70s and in the 80s with Islam, like an offshoot almost like the teachings, but it wasn't. Brother had created his own community in Brooklyn, New York. So Islam was conscious. I went in, I started reading Islam like right in incarceration in 1989. I was arrested in 88. By January 6, 1989, I was already Islam and fasting for Ramadan.
Crazy.
You know, this is not even conscious because this is just how it is sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're in the struggle, when you're in a battle, sometimes you just do things because that's what you want to do.
Now,
it's survival in there, period.
Sure. You know that I went. I don't remember the facility where I went and met you.
Mid Orange.
Yes, and you know they had a beautiful Muslim community over there. And how did that group support helped you to withstand the pressures of prison life?
Well, brother, I would say, coming up, I'm aggressive. I'm still aggressive, actually, as far as more of in a positive point. Back then, we used even aggression, even with building the teachers in the penitentiary. You remember, you dealing with murderers, rapists, killers,
yes.
You know, hustlers, drug dealers. So if you just, I don't know, so to me, you have to be born with it. You know, all of us have a gift. You know, sometimes we don't know our gifts. You know, some of us are good leaders. Like the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, our greatest followers in the street. You have people that are doing wrong in the street and they're successful. They just have the gift and they're just taking it for wrong. So dealing with the community sometimes, it's like you don't attract what you want. You attract what you are. So if you're strong, you attract strength. If you're weak, then you're going to be with the weak and things are just going to happen to you the way they happen.
So that means what you're actually saying is that there was an inner force in you that rose you above the mediocrity, huh?
Well, if I would say that, I'd be lying, because I was just going with the motion of what God had me going through at that time. I can't say that this was in me. I could just tell you what was my transition, because, you know, when you read the teachings, it's like But they say they write. When the 23 scientists write the history, they don't wait to watch it happen. They're writing it and walking into it at the same time.
What do you mean the 23 scientists?
Well, as you look in the book, they say there were 23 elders and the Lamb comes and took the book on the biblical perspective. Well, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said that's 23 scientists that sit and write down history for 25,000 years. That would be another extended conversation. I'm just giving you that's... You know, that's how I see the light. That's how I see my life. Sometimes I can sit back and look what I want and envision, yes, ideas, yes. Everything I have now, honestly, I could say was all a thought. It was an idea. So that's why I said, for me to say back then, at that inner force, I was just actually just going with whatever God was giving me at the time. I can't say if I knew the force, I acknowledged the force. You know, I could have just been doing it to be seen amongst men. I mean, we never know at the time. This is just my life. I'm just saying. In general, I was just going through it. Whatever was coming through my life, it was just coming, because there's really, you can't plan none in the penitentiary. Everything is like to you is the same.
Brother David?
Yes, sir. Well, a lot of the things that you mentioned, you talked about how there was already like a seed planted in you of the knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Can you describe how you encountered the members of the Nation of Islam when you were locked up?
Oh, yeah, bro, that's a beautiful. I could tell you the year and everything. It was 1991 in Caxsackie Correction Facility by a brother the name Abu Bakr Malik. Because back then, the Nation, if you was a follower of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, we used to congregate with the Sunni Orthodox Muslim community. You know, it was just, it was one. So we would all fast. And during the month of Ramadan, a brother was like, listen, brother, listen to these tapes. We were allowed cassette tapes. And when I was listening to the tapes, I heard the first tape of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, and that ignited the fire in me. And I was like, this is what I want to hear. This is what I've been waiting for. And that's when I started just my transition in life and just going along with the bumpers, going on with the bumps of life. It was a brother named Abu Bakr Malik.
Now,
who's located in the Buffalo Mars now.
Now, how long is it since you left the imprisonment?
I've been home 7 years and let's say, like 7.5 years. I've been home 7.5 years now.
Now, you know, that there is a big rate of, a tremendous rate of so-called recidivism.
Yes.
And how have you been able to keep yourself clean? And tell me about your life. Are you doing anything special or interesting?
Well, brother, right now I'm getting ready. I'm trying to set up a college tour. I want to go out throughout the universities and tell my story. It's called From Prison to Hollywood, Soul Survivor. Upon my release, I would say 2 to 3 months later, I was forced into an audition. I'm just giving you a recap real fast.
Yes.
And I was released in July 2006. I went to an audition 9 months later. I was casted in a major movie called Pride and Glory with stars like Colin Farrell, Ed Norton, and John Voight. And that's what actually opened the door for me. As soon as I came home, 90 days while I was home, the first 90 days, I worked as an intern in Lightyear Entertainment, which was an independent record label in the Village. And then I started working in the dental company. And then I went and made the movie. A year later, 9 months after being released, I made a movie. And I didn't even know. You know, I had no knowledge of nothing. And when I went on the set, they told me that the budget was $30 million. And I haven't looked back since.
Wonderful. So that means they saw the natural ability. Because you're really I studied acting for many years. And believe you me, you are a very you're very spontaneous and natural whenever you perform, even in your speaking engagement, you know.
Yeah, brother. You know, I mean, you have to be birthed of that blood or born of that spirit. That's just, you know, that's just how it is.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Allah has designed us all in all different ways, and I just I had a meeting this Friday with a public relations company and a gentleman who's writing a book. He wrote a book, actually, I think was the first the first heavyweight Latino champion of the world. Mm. And he wrote a children's book, and he wants to make animation. He wants to do it as a cartoon, Latino base, Hispanic base, you know, to have a cartoon just like, you know, Fat Albert and things like that. And I was like, that's good. And we were just sitting down and we were talking, and the PR firm introduced me to him and said, you know, this guy can be a good voice for you. And I just laid it right out, like all the cards on the table. I was like, listen, man, this is what you got to do. This is my life. This is where I'm going. And, you know, if you want to do something, we can do it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they're looking for a budget. They might do a cartoon.
Okay, excellent, excellent. Sister Teresa, you have been in the prison system as a helper of the Honorable Minister Luis Falcón, right?
Yes, sir.
What has been your experience, and how can you relate it to Brother Jason?
Yes, sir. Well, I had the opportunity to go into 11 prisons in the state of California, mainly men prisons. I went into 2 female and 1 adolescent youth authority, and what I've seen is that it is so unfortunate that blacks and Latinos are filling these prisons here in California, and the population is basically institutionalized. And so I was very curious when Brother Jason is talking to ask him what kept him from being institutionalized. And also, when you talk about your college tour, brother, many of our people aren't making it to colleges these days, specifically the so-called Latinos. And I was wondering if you had considered going into junior high and high schools, because the path that you took is the path that many youth are taking today, and as a result are ending up in prison and going in and coming out. And a lot of our brothers that are coming out find difficulty in coming out and getting jobs because now they have a record and their life is so difficult, and some of them turn back to crime. And so, what would be your advice, brother?
You forced to do for self, sis. when you come home, let me, you know, first of all, you have people that have never been to prison and can't even get a job. What I've learned since I've been home, I have not gotten a job with what I know. It's who I know. Every job I have gotten is somebody hooked me up. Somebody got me the job. And that's the reality because out here, you know, people that have college degrees can barely get jobs. You're forced to do for self. You have no choice. See, when you, first of all, most of us that went to prison, we already went to prison off rebellion off the top. And the system knows that. Either we rebelled with our parents, we rebelled with jobs, and we did something wrong to either get a fast buck, or while in the process of getting a fast buck, it caused us to shoot somebody or do whatever may happen, stab, cut, fight, assault, robbery, whatever it is. And when you come home, you're like basically forced to do for self. You have to, because the enemy, how is the enemy going to take care of you, really going to rehabilitate you when they set you in up and they're setting you up for failure already? That's why they take all the programs out of prison, because they knew statistically most of the brothers that were being released with college education, the recidivism rate was dropping. And even the recidivism rate for people doing 10 years and better while incarceration have beaten the recidivism rate. The people who do the recidivism are the 3 years, 4 years, that do little crimes, and the court, the judicial system just mis-sentenced them anyway, but it keeps them for the long term.
So you mean that there is money in recidivism?
Of course. There's money in prison, period. The prison
How would you explain the industrial prison complex?
Well, I was in Walk Hill Correctional Facility. Walk Hill Correctional Facility used to make opticals. So people that are on welfare, Medicaid, and also private insurance, the optics are being made in the prisons. And they're sending them to the labs in the streets, and then they're giving them to patients. Mm-hmm. So it's nothing but money, hand over fist. I've worked in recycling plants in prison. I've worked in a dairy farm in prison. I worked with calves in prison. I even worked on the New York State Thruway on the highway, picking up garbage in prison.
And what is the pay per hour?
Well, each one pays different. Like optical may pay you $75 every 2 weeks, which in prison, that's great money. Because you can save your money, your family sends you money. And some other industrial jobs, like the guys that milk the cows, they'll make $80 every 2 weeks. The guys, all different industries make different money.
They used to make $80 every 2 weeks. That means how many hours per day?
It's the basic 8 hours a day, brother.
8 hours times?
Regular 8 hours a day times maybe you're making maybe 25 cents an hour.
25 cents an hour, which is a great.
That's a job where you're looking, living like middle class in America.
Isn't that something?
In the penitentiary, in the prison world.
Yeah. Which is it's a fabulous money-making deal for the industrial complex, yeah.
Brother, they even have the racehorse retirement program is in prison. I even worked on a horse farm.
Wow.
Retired racehorses. And the prisoners take care of them until they drop.
Wow.
I even heard of a situation where airlines set up
tickets.
Inmates to take calls to buy tickets and make reservations through the prison. So there's so many businesses getting rich on 10, 25 cents an hour labor. So it's modern day slavery that exists in the prison. Brother Jason, I wanted to ask, when you say do for self, brother, can you explain what that means?
You have to become self-employed one way or the other. God is going to force you to do for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Simple and plain. Like the Bible says and the Messenger said, consider the ways of the ant and be wise. You never see the ant. How is the ant taught to survive and eat and bring itself food? How does the birds go? They say the early bird gets the worm. Nobody's taught a bird how to go fetch a worm, unless we know the birds have their own method. You know, sometimes some of us are not creative to create something for ourselves. And some of us are, you know, some of us can get good jobs because there's a lot of brothers that have been released from prison that have good jobs. Mm-hmm. But at, when you look at it, a job is just over broke because you're living from check to check. If your rent or your mortgage is, let's say, $1,000 a month and you make $500 a week and then you get after taxes, when you're looking at it, you're living from check to check.
Sister no. Victoria? Sister Victoria?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. I had a question for you, Brother Jason. Is I had a when I was about 18, I was growing up in Paterson, New Jersey, and
mm-hmm.
I used to go to you know play sports. And there was a young boy there that I was growing up with, and he didn't have a father figure, unfortunately, but he was going and heading in the wrong direction, more towards when he started turning into his teens, you know, to that 18. And when he was 18, he went into prison. He was put in prison for armed robbery with, you know, I believe it was a shotgun, and he was in for 10 years. The only people that actually visited him was his mother and myself. That was the only ones that ever, all of the people that he used to hang out with, never, you know, visited. And his mom was poor, you know. She, she lived on welfare, because, you know, with, she had a very job with a very low income and so forth. So we had to drive really far to visit him. And he swore, you know, every time we go see him, he said, you know, he was hurt because no one ever visited him. His friends, the ones that he hung out with and that he actually, you know, committed the crime with, never paid him a visit. But when he came out after 10 years, it didn't last long before he actually went back in, and this time it was for a longer period of time. So most of his youth, you know, he was spending it in jail. He didn't learn his lesson. What would you say to the youth that are heading like that in the same, the first time, you know, that they experience something like that and they believe that that's, you know, that they don't want that life, because that's what he used to tell me. He didn't want that life. He wanted to get married. He wanted to have children and all. But he didn't learn his lesson from the first time. What would you say to the youth out there?
You know, the youth, when you come to the youth, you have to come to the youth as the youth. First, you have to understand what they listen to, what they're looking at, and what they like. You know, most of us, even brothers and sisters, whether they have consciousness, Muslims, Christians, Jews, even professionals, bachelor's, master's degree, whatever it is, people have a tendency of always looking down at something that they used to do or looking down something that they was, and then they think they better. That's the term where we get you forgetting where you came from.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of us suffer from that. Even those who have wisdom, sometimes we may think we better than some. Well, it may be even unconscious because, you know, you used to do that. As opposed to, that's why most of the greatest people were either if you look at them, they were at the bottom, talking about dope fiends, crackheads, whatever may be at the bottom. Those become the best when they clean up because they know how it is. They know how to come to that person that's HIV positive and talk to them that got it from shooting everyone. And that's what you got to remember when you're coming and approaching the person, what kind of life that person lived and what he's been through. You know, are you? We got to come to them as them. You got to come to them with what they want to hear. They want to hear fashion. You need to know about fashion and guide them maybe to use some of the ideas for fashion. And instead of paying Tommy Hilfiger and Ralph Lauren all that money, maybe they can design something on their own. If you first, but then you got to teach them, how am I going to do that? Well, you got to learn about going to the wholesalers. Because in every community, there's a wholesale.
Mm-hmm.
That businesses are buying where we're buying it for at a retail price, that we're getting it. That other somebody else got it for wholesale. If you go to a 99-cent store and you're paying 50 cents for something, that means they got it for 10 cents or 20 cents because everybody's trying to make a profit.
Mm-hmm.
See, in hustling, you cut the middleman out. It's just like any illegal hustling. You want to cut the middleman out, and that's what the brothers I run with, that's what we do. We take that same mentality when we were savages and lost and found, and now we've converted it and showed you that if you use it for right, it's definitely going to work. That's how you got to come to the youth. Listen, I used to hustle just like you, take the brick and speak the language and tell them how you used to do what you do, and then they're going to look. It's like a woman. If a woman has been around and she did a whole bunch of things wrong, when you meet a sister who's been refined, she's going to come to that same girl and tell her, I know, baby, I was out there when I used to go to the telly and chase dudes that was hustling too. That's how you save people.
Now, definitely, it seems that there is a transition period in which the people who come out of jail need a certain type of guidance as the one that we're talking about.
Oh, definitely.
However, you know, our communities have failed in a sense to reach out, you know. It is only, you know, cases like with the Nation of Islam that have a tremendous, I mean, I see some of the brothers that have, you know, been in jail and come out, you know. And of course, there is an inner light and the lessons that are being taught in the Nation of Islam, that the do for self is so important, because
yes.
When you understand that man is the greatest force in the universe, in the sense that there is nothing higher than a human brain, then you understand that there is nothing unlimited. If you can think of it, you can produce it.
Yes, what the mind believes, the mind achieves.
Absolutely, yeah. Mm-hmm. Brother David?
Yes, sir. What you were talking about with the do for self, one of the things that I've noticed and encountered with our people is the issue of trust. How have you been able to use this teaching to establish, number one, trust among the people that you do business with, and those lasting relationships and friendships that have afforded you the opportunities that wouldn't have been there otherwise?
Well, brother, you see, right now we're doing business. You know, we have a magazine we're working, and we have to come among people. You have to show people that you need to be on time and you got to keep your word. See, even in the street, when you're doing something illegal, remember, it's illegal, so you want to be fast. You want to stick and move. You don't want to be in an area in case the police are coming to arrest you. That's one thing you always got to keep, stick and move and keep your word. And dealing with people, you have to keep your word. You know, that's all you got. Simple as that. That's something you can't explain. You have to live it. Because everybody could talk a good one. Hey, I'm a man of my word. I do this. I do less talking and more action. That's how we move. I mean, it's much better that way. Because sometimes curiosity kills the cat. People just see you. They know you're doing stuff, but then they really don't know. So it just creates a little curiosity. Just do it.
Now, let me add another question onto that one.
Mm-hmm.
You work also with magazine publishing and promotions and events and things like that. Now, obviously, in that world, in that lifestyle, there's a lot of the temptations that may have lured other people who had maybe a character flaw or whatnot into, you know, a moment of weakness or something like that. If you could talk about how the teachings of Elijah Muhammad and the strength that you got from Islam, how that's allowed you to avoid the pitfalls of people who, like what we already discussed about recidivism.
Yes, even to this day, brother, you know, we all think about when we look at it, you have to go in there. We all clean already. You know, we have our clean shaves, us and the whole team. All of us are clean shaved. You know, some of us look a little rugged. What I mean by that, you know, we got one of our brothers. He has a scar on his face, on his whole side of his face. Yes, he's been in prison. The brother's 6'6". So when you look at him, very intimidating looking brother, but he's clean and he's shaved. So it kind of throws you off guard. And the brother still has that same aura. And when we running around there, we looking, we have a goal. We have an aim and we got a purpose. We starting something with nothing and we're creating it into something. The whole goal is we're looking to create livelihoods and careers for ourselves. And right now this is the opportunity. Because sometimes I even get frustrated. I said, listen, we going to these events. These people have spent all their money at the bar with no problem. And here it is, we'll come to them with a magazine sponsoring and supporting you, and they won't even give you $2 for a raffle, but they quick to spend that $2 at that bar. So you know what I did? I used the same concept. We used the same concept as the Elijah Muhammad told Malcolm. He said, go for the youth and the old are following shame.
And shame. That's right.
So, you know, we go for the sisters because the women support more on the backbone regardless, and the brothers follow in shame. So they're going to end up spending the money and doing what they need to do regardless. So what we did, we came out with our third issue that's coming out next week is the All Women Rider issue. Mm. All women.
And they were right.
This is with the motorcycles, right?
Yes, it's all with the bike. Right. Brother, this is a world I'm new to. Even though I know the streets, it's the same concept, just a different world, different bylaws, and they run by laws. And I was just invited into it on an opportunity on a brother that had this business idea.
But there's a lot of strength in that community, in the bike club. So.
Yeah, it is a lot of strength. They're disciplined. They follow order, and it's perfect. Because, you know, like I said the other day, I'm looking around. You looking at it, and when you're thinking of business, you'd be like, you know what? We're the little people that support the big people. Because it's all of us as being consumer. We need beds. We need televisions. We need drawers. We need hangers to hang our shirts. You know, we have to live some type of civilization and be civilized even in our homes. So regardless, everybody's looking to save money sometimes. You know, but when you die, you ain't going to take it with you. So sometimes you just got to do what you got to do. You know, sometimes I see something I like, I just go broke, and it makes me hustle more to create some money knowing that I got to pay a bill. I just live for the rush. I live on the box, man. I don't live a structured life. That's all. I can't live a structured life. Okay, you're going to go, and this is how you're going to do A and go to B and go to C. So I know I really can't work for nobody. Me working for them is just me. Let me use this money to secure to do what I need to do. That's all I do. Not saying it's for everybody because everything is not for everybody. I'm just telling you that this just happens to be my life. You know, I'm looking at it like I was talking to somebody up there. I said, this is a legacy. Look what we're doing. Look at what we're creating. You know, right now, I can put DVDs inside a DVD, turn it on, and I can see myself on the screen. Or I can go on Google and Google my website, and it pops up with all my work. So I said I would never die. My body of work will live on for eons.
Brother Jason, you were never dead. You were asleep.
Yeah, I've been awoken. Somebody's always going to know. They can be able to go to pinpoint something. That's why they created the web. History will be in there for 1,000 years.
Yes.
And somebody will be talking about each and one of us 1,000 years from now once we did something to prove something or to show something or sometimes to sacrifice yourself for somebody else.
Brother Jason, one thing that I would like to ask you, even though your experience has been more, in prison, has been in New York. How do you see the division between Latinos and Blacks in the West Coast, and how the enemy is trying to kindle that division?
I'm glad you bring that up. Because even now to this day, even in the community right now in 2013, you'll go to certain communities and they'll still talk about black people bad. And then you'll have black people that'll talk about the so-called Latinos bad, the Mexicans saying and using always the excuse pointing the fault on somebody else. Oh, look, they taking the jobs. And you have even some Puerto Ricans that are ignorant to say that. Oh, these foreigners, they coming here taking the jobs. You can't be mad at them because they're smarter than you or willing to do something that you think you better to do. It's just like I said before. You know, I worked in CVS, brother. I mean, I came home and lost a job one day, and I said, you know what? I need to make some money. And I was working in CVS, and I had a car. I had my own car that I owned and would drive to CVS. And people were like, yo, why do you even work here? Because sometimes it's survival. My parole officer didn't even believe it. He popped up in my job to see, and I was right behind the counter. We ain't got no pride. This is survival.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Well, it's about survival.
Yeah, in this division, you know, basically, one of the difficulties that we have in unity is the lack of knowledge of history.
Yes.
Because we are really, the same people. And even though the span of time may be 16,000 years or maybe 5,000 years, whatever it is, but if you go back to India and, you will find that the people there were the same people as in Africa, as everywhere, because the color started recently, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Absolutely.
People use that as for division and deploy too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, that's just how they, you know, that's not, sometimes it's how people are, because, like I say, me and Brother Ty Kim, everywhere we go, it looks like we up to something. And people always make a comment about it. Every time we go somewhere, he's 6'6", big and tall, and I'm short. We both have boredom. It's like the unalike. They're like, they're trying to figure out, like, what the hell are we always doing together?
Mm-hmm.
And we're always up to something. Either we stick up kids, we up to something, we doing something. Everybody just, I don't know. It is like that.
Sister Victoria, do you have anything else to say to us?
Well, there's one thing that comes to mind, because the brother speaks a lot, Brother Jason, you speak a lot about, you know, doing for self. In the Muslim program, you know, the one of the things that they teach us is that if we were only to contribute to the economic program, we would actually be able to change our condition overnight. If there was 1 million of us that contributed and helped, because you had mentioned earlier, you know, that those that are in prison, incarcerated, they're the ones producing most of the items and things that we consume, and you know, for pennies. But
mm-hmm.
they come out with large skills, you know, big skills that we can use. We can use in this to build this economic program. However, we're not there yet. We're not going.
Sometimes we're not given
the
chance.
Process. Right, they're
and
not
most,
given the chance.
Most
but
of the times, is we're not. That's why you have to. Sometimes you have to create your own chance.
Right.
You have to take the chance. Even people with knowledge, sometimes they're afraid. Let me tell you something. I learned, everybody's not built for sometimes to do certain things. Some people need to be in a structured environment. Believe it or not, some people need to be told what to do and how to do certain things. I've learned that in this journey.
I'm sorry, but I think that though we are failing those brothers and sisters, though, because knowing or having the knowledge of self, we should be backing this program up, and we should be able to produce, you know, and have these jobs so that they can come and work, knowing that the outside world is not going to give them the opportunity, the second chance that they need in order to lead a productive life and so forth.
Yeah, sister, it's funny you say that. We just said that. That's what me and Takin were just saying the other day. We have to have them jobs for our brothers. So when they come home, that's what we were talking about, building food routes for brothers like that. When they come home, we can give them their routes and help them so they can buy their own food route and create opportunities for themselves. So when brothers come home, that recidivism cycle, we would have employment for the brothers at the mosque. That's what we were talking about. That's the goal. But that's what we need. We got to have something for them, the economic program. You hit it. You on it. You on it. That's exactly what we're trying to do.
Praise be to God.
You don't have to ask the enemy for nothing.
But, you know, during when I was minister in number 7J under the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, we established a restaurant on 110th and 3rd Avenue, and then we expanded into 3 different restaurants. So the brothers that came from jail, they had a job, you know. And so we were able to employ the people. And and this is very important, to have a businesses. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, as a leader of New York, he had he encouraged businesses. And we had, you know, the community, the believers, we had a lot of our businesses throughout the metropolitan area. Steak and take, different type of businesses, you know, bakeries, you know. So there was a lot of activity, business activity. We were busy making business. You know, yeah. of course, there are, you know, business is very, very important, you know. Okay, we have just a few more minutes, Sister Teresa, do you have some last words? And then Brother David and Sister Victoria, and then Brother Jason.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. So I just wanted to say that a lot of times many of our people are incarcerated as a result of their own pain and addiction, but when they come out, the prison didn't help them, and it wasn't intended to. And so I think it's so important to set up help for our brothers and our sisters, because they need help, and we understand what turned our lives around. And a lot of times, I work as a substance abuse counselor, and what I see is that addiction is totally associated to pain, and many of the people that I help, particularly brothers, when I'm trying to help them look at what are their options, what are they going to do, and not all of them have a prison record, but some of them do, and we start writing down what is it that you've done in your past with regards to work skills. And I am amazed at how talented our brothers are and some of the skills that they have. And even to be able to put a resume together for them, that they may have never had a resume in their life, and just seeing it, they feel good about it. And so we have to find ways to help our people come up, to help our people come up, because they're beat down, and being in prison has even made it worse. And so I thank you, Brother Jason. You have such a positive attitude, an exciting life, in my opinion, and you give hope to the many of our brothers and sisters who are coming out and feeling hopeless. You're definitely an inspiration, and I thank Allah that you have come here to share with those that are listening. And I pray, brother, that you will continue your work and consider going into the community, junior high and high schools, where the youth can hear you, because they...
That's the goal.
Yes, sir.
You just keep making that fish when I get down there. All praise due to Allah.
We have very few minutes, so very briefly, Brother David, Sister Victoria, and Brother Jason.
Brother Jason, I just want to thank you for being on the call. I remember when I first met you, I thought your story was inspirational. And, you know, I look forward to being, you know, there as you share it, hopefully next weekend at the annual Savior's Day Convention in Chicago, inshallah.
Inshallah.
Sister Victoria.
Brother Jason, thank you so much for your words. You are... Brother Jason, excuse me, that you are an inspiration to the youth, to myself, you know, that you're doing so much. And like Sister Teresa, please continue to do the work, because I work with children, and you are needed out there. You definitely are needed out there. Thank you. May Allah continue to bless you, brother.
Thank you, sister.
Brother Jason.
Oh, I'd like to thank all of the believers. I've met you, maybe, despite you, Sister Victoria. I never met you, but all the brothers and sisters, you know, that I've met, I thank you, you know. You all know my attitude, my spirit is basically what you see is what you get, but you just got to move it, you know. As positive, you could do it, but sometimes just being who you are, be happy with yourself. Whatever Allah has blessed you to be, just be happy with it, and things will fall in. I mean, that's just how I look at it. Sometimes I even get impatient. You know, I'm not perfect. I'm all messed up. I sometimes wait for the last minute for everything. But to me, if it works for me, you know, Allah is blessed with it, and that's how I go.
All praises be to Allah. Yes, indeed. Well, Brother Jason, I am so very proud of you, because I have known you for a long time now, and we used to correspond.
Yes, sir.
And it is a wonderful testimony of someone from our Latino community, that is has come from imprisonment and is now a shining light into the world, and who is now not only giving a testimony of how he has kept himself so-called, you know, clean, but who is also very active in entrepreneurship, you know, and making mm-hmm. businesses and doing wonderful things, and very, very imaginative in his business endeavors. So we want to thank you for being here, and we hope it's not the last time.
Never. Okay. No, brother, you know that.
Oh, praises be to Allah. Yes, indeed.
You know I don't eat and run. I come back for seconds, man. I got a little bit of class, brother. Yes, sir. Everybody has my information. Don't be shy, you know. Stay in touch. I just read the emails you sent, Sister Teresa, with the study group in the Dominican Republic. I didn't get to finish it because I was just doing everything. So I'm going to go over them later on.
Absolutely.
And pull some of them up.
Me too. Yes, indeed. Okay, so.
Everyone, have a good evening. Thank you for having me. And I'll see most of you, inshallah, soon. Some of you later.
Okay.
And we'll be together. We always together, so we'll be together.
And is there going to be a workshop for the prison ministry in Chicago for Savior's Day, Sister Teresa?
Yes, there is, and the workshop is actually focused towards DNA. It's called Fight for Innocence, Youth of DNA, and this is hosted by the brother at National that does the prison ministry, Brother
Abdul.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's very, we have a lot of very innocent people, and I was just reading about, you know, slavery by another name. This mm-hmm. is something. Have you seen that documentary?
No.
Yes.
Slavery by another name.
The book and the documentary.
Yeah. The book and the documentary. Very, you know, how they kept black people, you know, in literal slavery for more than 8 years. And this is what's happening now. I mean, we have the biggest prison population in the world, and mostly are our people.
That's right.
You know,
3 million.
Yeah, our people, you know, Aboriginal people.
Mm-hmm.
And so, very well. So, I forgot to give the information for any call.
Welcome to the Black Hole Radio Network, a collective of like-minded humans.
Okay.
That's all cute, brother. Assalamualaikum.
I like that.
Follow us on Twitter and catch us at www.blackholeradio.com.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.